So my name is José Bové. Listen to health writers if you are concerned about the health of the body politic.
Good evening and welcome to Health Writers on the Air. I'm your host this evening, Steve Blank. It's a question of leadership. The continued existence of our species is threatened only by one thing, our species. More of us each day realize that human life is doomed if we don't pull our collective head out of the sand and face reality. We can't continue to exist perpetuating an economic model that adds stress to an exploding population by funneling shrinking resources into fewer hands. The system becomes increasingly unfair to more people every day. And we can't survive by destroying our ecosystems for profit. The Gulf of Mexico is not going to be all right, ever again. Water is our most precious resource, necessary for all life. But we spend more money searching for water on Mars than we do protecting and distributing the water we already have here on Earth. Tonight, I'm going to speak with Dr. Gina Solomon about how the BP oil disaster is affecting workers trying to clean up the mess, and what potential harm may face the population along the Gulf Coast. But first, we'll have a visit from Uncle Andy. He's wondering what all the fuss is about regarding BP. Then, we'll hear from health writer Mary Summers on how fresh water is being used as a sort of weapon in the Middle East. We've heard a lot about the Israeli embargo against imports into Gaza. But what about Israel's control over the region's water supply? Let's start with Uncle Andy.
Hello, boys and girls. This is Uncle Andy from Health Writers. And I want to talk to you a little bit about some things that have been bothering me. My health is not that good because I haven't been able to sleep. I haven't been able to eat well. I only have maybe 4 or 5 meals a day. I get headaches, and I can't figure out why. And then I sat down and I thought about it. And I'm going through all this because I'm a liberal. You know, liberals spend all their time questioning things. They have no certitude. They come out with no dogma. They sit down and they try to figure things out with facts and so on. That's how you get all confused. And I really don't want to be a liberal anymore because that's making me sick. You know, even liberals don't want to be liberals. They call themselves progressives. But conservatives, on the other hand, they don't have any problems. They believe everything, whether it's rational or not. I mean, they just believe. And they've got people around like Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, telling them what's going on. Like, for instance, there's a politician in Nevada. She's running for office, and they were asking her questions. And she said, she's talking about abortion. She said, "I'm a Christian." And I said, "Wow, we're back to that. I haven't heard that since Harriet Myers." That is our dogma. That is what we need. The other day, British Petroleum was being condemned all over the place. Because they just about put us out of business. They may kill us. And nothing is left on the Gulf of Mexico. But one of the conservatives, Joe Barton from Texas. You know, it's always Texas. I love Texas. I don't know whether they breed these people or what, but Texans pop out all the time with them. He said, "We shouldn't apologize to British Petroleum. That's a corporation. And we shouldn't make them put up money to pay for their mistakes. That's not the American way. The American way is nobody pays for their mistakes. America pays for everybody's mistakes." And then a few more Republicans jumped in and said, "Obama is asking extortion." You see, Mr. Obama attacked something very wonderful, the corporation. A corporation's made our country great and will continue to do so. A few years back, there was a fellow named Charlie Wilson. man I never met, I didn't know, but I'm on a first-name basis. I can quote him. He said, if it's good for General Motors, it's good for America. And that is wonderful. Except lately, things haven't been going too well for General Motors, and things haven't been going too well for America. But the whole idea is that through our corporations, we have continued to maintain a strong and wonderful America. And that our Supreme Court recognized that. Over and over lately, on a 5-4 decision, our Supreme Court says corporations have every constitutional right they want and a few more. It's people that don't have any constitutional rights. But that's being very harsh. The U.S. Supreme Court said, hey, there's one you still have. People have the Second Amendment right to carry a weapon no matter what age you are. And that's wonderful. Primary schools, kindergarten, they're all going to be able to fight off the bullies. You can be the last kid in your neighborhood to be the only kid in your neighborhood. Conservatives are only worried about three things, and that clears up all sorts of things. I don't have to worry about oil spills. Conservatives tell me there's only three things to worry about: gays, God, and guns. We took care of guns. Everybody has a gun. Gays, the idea is we stone them. If you can't individually stone one, we'll get groups together and we'll have a stoning party. And God, there's not much to say. You just say God. There's no question of what God is. God is God. And that is the new philosophy in which is going to take away my worries. You know, the conservatives are so great. I saw they got a group called the Heritage Foundation. I was checking them out the other day. If I join, they will send me a publication, How to Read the Federalist Papers. I think that's so great. I don't even have to read them. They're going to tell me how to read them. And they're going to tell me, obviously, what's in them. Now, we have looked at the country and its problems, and I'm beginning to feel a lot better. I'm beginning to feel a lot more sure of myself by not having to think and saying whatever somebody tells me to say. I have simplified my life completely. Remember, boys and girls, what we want to do is we want to beat our children into plowshares and then to turn those plowshares into swords. With that wonderful thought, I'm going to leave you. Good night. Thank you.
Well, that's telling it like it is, Uncle Andy. And now for something completely different. Someday Health Writers needs to do a program about bad, dysfunctional, abusive marriages. Should they continue or should they be ended before all hell breaks loose? I mention that because Obama met with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu for constructive talks on Tuesday. But DePaul University professor Norman Finkelstein commented that their conversation resembled a marital spat, noting that while they've squabbled in the past, Obama still insists that the two countries maintain an unbreakable bond. Does that mean the abuse of Gaza will continue? Here's Mary Summers to tell us about the control of fresh water in Gaza.
On July 1st, Israeli warplanes destroyed an irrigation well in the north of Gaza. Numerous military attacks on the Gaza Strip have devastated Gaza's water infrastructure. Water is also diverted from Palestinian resources to illegal Israeli settlements and into Israel. When the State of Israel was established in 1948, hundreds of thousands of Palestinians were driven from their homes in what is now southern Israel to the small and arid Gaza Strip. At the same time, Israel cut off access to water sources around Gaza. The only source available, the Gaza Aquifer, could not support the huge and sudden rise in populations, and the water it generates has been steadily deteriorating for more than 60 years. Israel denies materials, fuel, and permits to sustain and expand water systems. Military attacks predictably and often deliberately destroy wells, water tanks, pipes, treatment plants, and sewage systems. With water and food already in short supply in Gaza due to the three-year-old blockade, the loss of a well or plot of farmland add to the dire humanitarian situation. Although Israel officials recently announced they would ease the blockade, many are still concerned that a lack of access to vital natural resources will continue. The three-year siege of Gaza has meant an increasingly long waiting list of spare parts, pipes, and building materials. Because of the blockade on supplies to repair and maintain water systems, the water in Gaza is inadequate and the quality is dangerous. Because of all this, much of the water in Gaza suffers from pollution by untreated sewage, agricultural chemicals, or seawater. Gaza's water contains high levels of nitrates, chloride, and fluoride, and other pollutants that cause significant health problems, including parasitic infections, kidney disease, heart disease, damage to the nervous system, cancers, weakened bones and teeth, and a life-threatening type of anemia. And the blockade has caused some 280 million in agricultural losses. Gaza farmers have concentrated their farming on some essential crops like tomatoes, cucumbers, potatoes, and most recently watermelon. But they have a difficult time obtaining seeds and fertilizers to grow crops. Gaza farmers also export crops, including strawberries and flowers. Before the blockade, Gaza farmers exported an estimated 32 million flowers. But over the last 2 years, Israel has restricted exports to about 700,000 flowers annually. The situation for Gaza is grim. The only hopeful sign is that public opinion seems to be shifting in the United States towards the situation. Many people did not even know there was a blockade until the recent deadly attack on a Gaza aid convoy that resulted in international pressure to lift the blockade. Without the money and support of the United States, Israel would no longer be able to continue their life-threatening oppression of the Palestinian people. The politically correct position has been to allow Israel to do whatever it wants in the name of security. It is the Jewish people in the United States who need to see the basic need of Palestinians for access to clean and safe water. This is a fundamental human right. Americans need to understand that the military order seizing control of Palestinian water resources in the occupied territory were issued by the Israeli army soon after it occupied the area in December 1968. This military order to seize the water remains in force today. We all need to dialogue with all Americans as the answers are there. It is fear and lack of understanding of what the policies of Israel are that is causing the difficulty. The United Nations explains, Israel as the occupying power must respect the Palestinians' human rights, including the right to an adequate standard of living, which encompasses the right to water and food, the right to health, and the right to work. The American Jewish people have a powerful Washington lobby that has the ear of Congress. They need to persuade their lobby to begin supporting protection of the fundamental water rights of the people of Gaza. President Obama, in his Cairo address, said that Israel must also live up to its obligations to ensure that Palestinians can live and work and develop their society. And just as it devastates Palestinian families, the continuing humanitarian crisis in Gaza does not serve Israel's security. Neither does the continuing lack of opportunity in the West Bank. Progress in the daily lives of the Palestinian people must be part of a road to peace, and Israel must take concrete steps to enable such progress. This is what Obama told the world last year, and Israel continues to bomb water wells in Gaza, when there is such a shortage of water. Many of us are afraid to talk to the American Jews about the Palestinian problems. Maybe we could begin with explaining that when the children at a Palestinian refuge camp were given the opportunity to hold an election to choose one thing they most wanted for their school, they chose to have drinking water. Well, what would you choose? This is Mary Summers from Health Writers.
Thank you very much, Mary. And now we turn our focus to the health of people in close proximity to the BP oil disaster in the Gulf. I'm speaking with Gina Solomon. She is a senior scientist with the Natural Resources Defense Council in San Francisco. I want to learn about the short-term and potential long-term effects of the BP disaster on human health. Gina, welcome to Health Writers.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Let's start by discussing the plight of the out-of-work fishermen down in the Gulf and all the other workers who have been hired to take on the hazardous task of cleaning up at least what we can see of BP's mess. They just got respirators. Why are respirators important to the workers, and why did it take 80 days for them to get them?
I wish I could say that all these fishermen have respirators, but in fact only a very small number of the workers did get respirators starting last Thursday, which is about 70 days into the spill. When I was down in Louisiana talking with the workers who were being deployed for cleanup duty, I was shocked to find that these fishermen, you know, who had been put out of work by the BP spill, were they were desperate economically and were scrambling to be hired for cleanup work because that was the only way they could hope to pay off their loans. They were being given only a four-hour abbreviated hazardous materials training and being sent out without respiratory protection, and they were told not to worry, that the air quality was fine out there, no health risks. And in fact, some of these men were concerned enough that they obtained their own respirators, and they were told by BP that they couldn't wear them. In fact, that they would be fired, and you know, if they were wearing their own respirators. So, there's really been a problem down there with worker safety, and it's still not completely resolved. Although we saw some progress last week.
What do you suppose BP is so afraid of? I mean, why do they refuse to protect the workers, even when the workers at their own expense go out and buy these respirators?
Well, BP and some of the federal agencies have some good reasons and some bad reasons for their decisions. They do point out quite correctly that the temperatures are very high and the humidity is high down there, and respirators actually do increase the risk of heat stroke, which is life-threatening and is a real concern. But there are other ways to protect workers from heat stroke by giving them rest breaks, making sure there's adequate shade and that they get plenty to drink. So there are ways to wear a respirator if needed, there shouldn't be a trade-off there.
Mm-hmm.
They also are assuring us that the levels of oil-related pollutants in the air are low. And only recently we're finally getting some data from BP. And the data at first glance looks pretty good because the vast majority of samples, in fact, do show very low levels or non-detects for most of the hazardous pollutants like benzene. But the BP data also do show that there are elevated levels of benzene and other pollutants such as 2-butoxyethanol, in some cases above the standards set or the guidelines set by the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. So although these levels are technically legal, they may not be safe.
Now, Gina, you had written a little while ago that OSHA hasn't updated those levels, the permissible exposure limits, for, in some cases, decades. So that's some pretty old data they're working with.
We went back and took a look at some of the oil-related pollutants and when the OSHA standards were set. Many of these standards were set in the early 1980s. So they are old. They don't reflect current science. They are not adequate and, in fact, are widely recognized, even by industry, not to be adequate to protect health. And they also are designed for people who are punching a clock for 8-hour work days, 5 days a week. And as we all know, these workers cleaning up the Gulf spill are out there 24-7 in many cases, sometimes sleeping on their boats, breathing that same air all day and all night. So using an OSHA standard as a comparison is really not appropriate for lots of reasons.
You know, I just wonder, do you have any idea how much money these people are being paid?
The BP is paying them well. They actually are being paid on the order of $1,200 a day.
Wow.
Which is good. They would actually be making more money with a haul of shrimp, which would be their normal activity this time of year. Of course, the shrimping season is short, so they make a lot of money during the window of time when they're shrimping, and then not during the off season.
I wonder how many of them have any idea of the consequences to their health.
A lot of the fishermen are very concerned. Some of them have been feeling symptoms themselves. Some of them are talking with other guys who are not feeling well. All of them are worrying about future health effects. And even the anxiety is a real health issue because, when people are kind of trying to weigh economic security, the reason these guys really need that money is they put in major investments to get their boats ready for the shrimping season. And they go into debt each year when they do that. And these loans needed to be paid off. The banks need the money. They can't just bring the nets that they, their new nets back and sell them back
Sure. To
the store. So they're squeezed between a health concern and an economic concern. And when that happens, one of the problems is that people's mental health suffers, and we already saw one apparent suicide among one of the fishermen, and I'm very worried about mental health issues and physical health issues in this group of people.
Yeah, when people are under that kind of mental stress, and then they start to feel sick, and in some cases I've been reading where people have been dizzy and woozy and not thinking coherently, a person can be pushed to a terrible mistake like that.
Yeah, so the good news is that we have been seeing a dramatic increase in activity by OSHA, and they've now got quite a presence down there on the Gulf Coast. They are really out there with air monitoring equipment along the shoreline, so they're really doing a pretty good job with the beach workers.
Are they becoming more concerned about the general population along the coast?
Well, we have this problem with jurisdiction. So OSHA is out there trying to protect the beach workers and the folks who are just offshore. But OSHA's jurisdiction ends 3 miles offshore, and OSHA has no jurisdiction over non-workers. EPA, meanwhile, is trying to protect and collect information to protect the general public, and the Coast Guard is presumably off trying to protect the offshore workers, although they have been less forthcoming with either data or with what they're actually doing to protect the people who are most at risk. And most of the fishermen are working more than 3 miles offshore, or many of them are. And so those folks are actually outside of OSHA's jurisdiction, which is another concern. And it's just frustrating when everywhere you look, there are different agencies and there are boundaries and people falling through the cracks.
Yeah, and there's obviously a lot of protection of the corporate interests going on. But let's move on. I was reading one of your reports, and it about how we learn from past oil spills. And it occurred to me, as I was reading that report, how most of us forget how frequently these large oil spills happen. You cited several very large spills that occurred since the Exxon Valdez disaster that either I hadn't read about or that I'd forgotten about. So what effects have these previous oil spills have in the past 15 or 20 years?
There are oil spills with disturbing regularity all around the world. And in fact, there have been some studies now and reports out of the Niger Delta about almost BP size oil spills happening pretty much all the time
on land
off the coast of Nigeria, on land and also offshore in Nigeria, where there are just really uncontrolled, unregulated oil drilling going on. But we have learned surprisingly little from all of these historic spills. I did a review of the scientific literature that's been published on health issues from oil spills, and there are not a lot of published studies. Just a few on the Exxon Valdez, one on acute injuries and acute health effects in workers that resulted in workers' compensation claims, and then one looking at mental health effects, which were quite significant in workers in the general population as well. The best studied incident was a 2002 tanker spill off the coast of Spain called the Prestige oil spill. And there's a group of Spanish researchers that have been studying and are still studying people who were involved in that cleanup and local residents. And they found chromosomal abnormalities, immunologic alterations, quite a variety of respiratory issues and mental health concerns, mental health problems in that population.
Well, we're running out of time. I just wanted to state that, when you talk about the oil leaking from the unobserved old equipment in the Niger Delta, and I hear today that there are some 27,000 abandoned oil wells in the Gulf of Mexico that I guess the government isn't doing anything to inspect or ensure their safety, that they're not leaking. I think that's something we really need to have a call to action on.
This whole issue raises the broader question about whether there's really any safe way to use petroleum products. I actually was, when the Gulf oil spill happened, I happened to be up in Canada investigating a cancer cluster in a Native American town.
30 seconds, Gina, 30 seconds.
Called Fort Chippewa near the tar sands developments. And then I had to go down to the Gulf, and all of these areas are places where people are having health problems and the environment's being destroyed. So reducing or eliminating our dependence on oil is really the ultimate solution.
Thank you so much for being on our show, Gina Solomon. You can visit Health Writers at healthwriters.wordpress.com. Our next show will be Thursday, July 22nd at 7 p.m. Stay tuned now for Radio Literature.
Sleeping, it's a pain. Can't you play?